Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, number 297.
Yes, my voice is like 9 registers lower than it normally is, because I got sick while I was traveling, and the throat thing lasted well beyond the sickness. It left a parting gift in the way of not having a voice, but super fun shows in Nashville and Chicago, so thank you so much if you came out to those. I'd like to thank the sponsor for this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. That would be Stamps.com. It's the holiday season, if you're listening to this right around when it went up, and if not, that's on you, pal. But why wait in line at the post office? It's not necessary. If you have Stamps.com, you can mail everything from your place. The mailman will come pick it up. He'll just pick it up from your place, and you don't have to go wait in line at the post office and have people be angry at you because you're in their way and because they have a million things to do and kids screaming in the car, and none of it's your problem. So use Stamps.com. Print exactly the postage you need right from your desk. It's super easy, super convenient. You can use the offer code Nerdist to get a special, no-risk trial, $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale up to $55 in free postage. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist. Stamps.com into the promo code Nerdist. And now, the CM Punk episode. You asked for it, and I have responded. CM Punk came on Talking Dead recently with Yvette Nicole Brown from Community, and they were fantastic guests. I mean, they were huge fans of The Walking Dead. They brought up interesting points. They debated. They were passionate about it. I really urge you to see that if you already have it on your DVR, because it's not available anywhere in the world otherwise. Talking Dead's not online or anywhere that I'm aware you can see it. Unless you work for AMC, then you might have access to it, but you probably don't. So I apologize for that. And on that tip, it's now time for disclaimers, corrections, and apologies. My first disclaimer and or apology is to wrestling fans. I do not mean any disrespect to you at all. I just need you to know up front that I am not a huge watcher of wrestling, not since I was a kid when I grew up in Memphis. And so I don't really know anything. I don't know that much about wrestling. I really do. I apologize to you, because if you're a hardcore wrestling fan and you wanted some really deep dive, granular, inside scoop on the world wrestling, I don't have it. I talk to Punk as a guy, you know, just like dudes who, by the way, I found out, and I kind of got a glimpse of this when he was on Talking Dead, but super nerdy guy. I mean, like, super nerdy guy. Super nerdy tattoos. His apartment, which I will describe in the episode, has unbelievable stuff in it, including a flux capacitor. And he and I bonded over the fact that we both have Real Genius t-shirts. We both have original, from when the movie came out, Real Genius t-shirts. Mine was given to me by my girlfriend Chloe, his by Colt Cabana. So we bonded over that. And already, if none of these things mean anything to you, then you should probably turn this podcast off right now and save your anger, because then you'll get angry at me, and then you'll say horrible things to me on Twitter. Just save yourself the energy. Save your anger for inanimate objects, like your computer. Yell at that, not at people. So, but again, I don't mean any disrespect to the wrestling fans. So that's first. Secondly, correction. Early in the podcast, I make a reference to a very famous hockey player by the name of Jeremy Roenick, who I just met when I was in Chicago. Very nice guy. I accidentally said his name is Jeremy Roenick Why? Because I'm an idiot. I don't follow hockey either. I know. It's a sportsless universe that I live in. I've said this many times. And also, his name's too close to Jeremy Renner. So, I'm sorry, I said Jeremy Renick, but I know it's Jeremy Roenick. So please don't hip check me or give me an elbow to the face or push me into the glass or some other hockey terms that I don't know because I said his name wrong. I know what the correct name is. And then finally, I will say it was really great getting to know Punk. Really good guy. Really good guy. And we're pals now. And if you say anything shitty about me, he's going to beat the crap out of you. He said he would in the podcast. So suck on those CM Punk fists as they hit your mouth. Nerds Podcast number 297 with CM Punk.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Just put the dog paw in the concrete. Okay, this is perfect. All right, that's it. We're recording. This is very exciting. CM Punk was on Talking Dead a few weeks ago, and we hit it off. And then here I'm in Chicago, and you are also in Chicago.
For once.
And we have made this podcast thing happen.
I'm nervous, actually.
No, you're going to be great. How could you be nervous? Come on.
I have no doubt that I'll be great, which is probably a very egotistical thing to say. I just, you know, I'm following, in my mind, Mel Brooks and Malcolm McDowell. You know what I mean? So that's
true.
It's kind of daunting.
That's true. Mel is tough to follow, and Malcolm is tough to follow, but they can't pile drive anyone.
No.
Particularly not now.
I don't know. I'd let Mel Brooks pile drive me.
But I would, too. But he would do it in the friendliest way.
Yeah.
Come here, let me just pile drive you. Whatever you want.
I can't imagine.
You said Blazing Saddles was your favorite movie.
Yeah, I don't know if it's of all time my favorite movie, Slapshot.
Uh-huh.
Blazing Saddles is definitely, it's in the top 10, if not the top 5. This is something that I could discuss till the cows come home. Like, my actual movie top 5 or top 10, it's too damn hard.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Slapshot, because I just was thinking about Slapshot today, because I did the Man Cow show this morning to promote these comedy shows.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Renick was on.
Okay.
And so I wanted to ask questions about, like, can you imagine playing hockey when they didn't have to wear any headgear and it was just face, ice, fist? Like, that to me is...
He got his face crushed with a puck.
All his teeth are fake.
Yeah, he had his entire face reconstructed because, yeah, he didn't wear one of those guards. He just had the helmet on.
And he seems like he was like, oh, I'm really happy now. He just wrote this book. I guess he went through a lot of shit. But but they said, I think Mancow asked him, like, were you in pain when you woke up this morning? And he goes, oh, yeah, every morning. Yeah, I'm in pain every morning. Like, it's almost like Wolverine's claws. Like, yeah, it hurts all the time.
Yeah.
Every time it hurts.
Yeah.
But... It's just, you don't think that, you know, when you're young and you're like, grr, I'm just going to rip everyone's fucking head off, you don't think, someday my body is going to make me pay.
Yeah, I don't think I actually thought my body was going to make me pay until, you know, maybe last year.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still felt great, and now I'm 9 days post knee surgery right now, and... I don't ever want to have another surgery as long as I live. It's a rotten experience.
So was it an ACL or was it just...
No, if it was an ACL...
Oh, you wouldn't be moving.
No, I just got it scoped. I had a bucket tear of my meniscus.
And oh, okay.
The cartilage flipped up and lodged itself in the joint and I couldn't move my leg.
ACL is the only knee thing I knew to say.
Yeah.
So a lot of times that's a safe bet. If you go ACL, people go, yeah, ACL. Okay.
No, I wouldn't. I'd be
smarter than I...
We'd be podcasting over the phone, I think.
But it actually doesn't look that bad. It's just like two tiny little Band-Aids right there.
Yeah, I took the stitches out the other day, and, you know, I aggressively rehab so I can get back in the ring sooner.
You're walking around?
Yeah.
I want to talk about how amazing your place is.
Oh, thank you.
It really does. I think I said this when I came here. Like, this feels like the sitcom apartment from, like, when you'd watch, like, Friends. You go, who the fuck can afford that apartment? You know, but this is... It's like a super cool multi-story but open kind of floor plan.
You've only seen like one room too, really. There's a whole bunch of secret rooms and trap doors and stuff.
God, let's just talk about the contents of your place. As I look around, I see a gorgeous portrait of Wolfman, Vincent Price. I see a bunch of horror characters. I see a Leatherface. There's a Big Trouble in Little China poster.
Signed by the cast.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Signed by Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
And did Kim Cattrall sign it?
I think she did.
God damn it.
Yeah.
And then next to that on the floor is a flux capacitor. An actual flux capacitor.
Yeah, just sitting around.
Whatever.
Spare parts.
You know, just throw some stuff together. So you were hanging a clock on your toilet, and that's when you slipped, and then you got a concussion.
And that is what makes time travel possible. Absolutely.
Then I see a Creature from the Black Lagoon. So you're a huge... Your place reminds me of Rob Zombie's place, where it's like, it's this specific sector of kind of, you know, like horror sci-fi genre.
I'm most proud that you can walk in and not know what I do for a living. Because I don't have a bunch of junk, you know. I don't have pictures or toys of myself hanging up, which a lot of pro wrestlers seem to do that, and I've always thought that was kind of weird.
You're not going
to
do the big painting of like you naked in a clamshell?
I didn't say that.
Okay, all right. Because I haven't seen all the rooms yet.
It'll have nothing to do with wrestling.
I, you know, people are going to be so fucking mad at me, and I apologize, but I have not watched wrestling in a really long time, and I'm sure that's going to infuriate a lot of wrestling fans. Like, how could you get to sit down and talk and you don't even know all this stuff? But I just assume the internet's going to yell at me no matter what, so I fucking just can't care.
The funny thing about that is the wrestling fans who constantly complain about the content of the shows, and they still watch every week, so...
They just want to complain.
So you don't watch, and then they're going to complain about you not. They want you to be miserable with the rest
of them. It's better that I don't, because if I came on with a bunch of knowledge and specific questions, they'd be like, how the fuck could you think that? What is it good? You know, like, whatever. They're going to attack you no matter what. But I grew up in Memphis, right when... Wrestling became it was just about to make the transition from local public access is what it looked like. But I was there when Jerry Lawler was there and Andy Kaufman and like Jimmy Hart and those guys, and they would do it down, I think, at like WHBQ or like something downtown, like something in the city.
Yeah, and little studio wrestling.
Yeah. That's exactly what it was. And then within maybe 5 years, all of a sudden it was like, oh, these are fucking like huge stadium theater type things, and wrestling had become a national phenomenon.
It's crazy. I don't know if they're ever going to look back on what I've done and like the era I've wrestled in and consider it like art. But the stuff that you, I don't know if you got to see it or if you just grew up around
it,
but it was there. I mean, that stuff is unbelievable to me. That stuff is art. Like Memphis wrestling and Andy Kaufman, like that's amazing. And that's kind of like our worlds colliding right there. Kaufman is a comedian, entertainer, and the wrestling. If I had the flux capacitor over there worked, that's probably all I would do.
You'd go back in time.
I would go back in time and just go to wrestling shows and see bands maybe I never got to see. You know, like the Misfits play like Jersey in 1981 or something like that.
Oh yeah, that's right. You never see a time travel movie where someone just goes back to see all their favorite stuff from when they were.
No, I'm not going to go back in time and try to stop Hitler or stop, you know, John Wilkes Booth from assassinating Lincoln or anything like that. No, I'm going to go see like Guns N' Roses in '86 play the Sunset Strip or something.
And then you're going to take Guns N' Roses back to play and then murder Hitler.
I'm a very selfish person.
You're going to murder Hitler with Guns N' Roses.
I'm not a bad idea.
You'll just sit Hitler down with Axl Rose for like 10 minutes and be like, this guy is an egomaniac.
We would have to pick a way more Jewish band, I think.
Oh, to fuck with Hitler.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the Misfits are Jewish, actually.
Like, and then Jerry and then they get to kill Hitler.
Yeah.
With the power of rock.
Yeah.
With the giant subwoofer that you bring from Doc Brown's lab. And you strike the chord.
It all comes around.
I love how, you know, on the show, when you did Talking Dead, there was a moment where I felt really bad because I think I said something to you like, you look like a lot of the people who used to beat me up. And you were like, hey, I'm not that guy. Like, I was not, you know. And then as we kind of got to talk more, and certainly being in your apartment, what I uncovered is this, like, this nerdy guy who's in the body of a Viking.
Okay.
And so it's,
Are you hitting on me?
Hey, let's just...
I'll take it.
Let's just keep the microphones running.
No, I definitely, I got stuffed in garbage cans just like you did.
Did you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How did you keep from going further down the... Like, what was that what kind of made you go, I'm going to work on my physical prowess so this will not happen again?
I think that had a big part of it. And when I became a sophomore in high school, two things happened. Growth spurt. I was suddenly taller than everybody.
Yep.
And Green Day became exponentially popular. And, like, you know, I mean, here's a band that I loved and I saw play a bowling alley, and then fast forward 12 months, they're selling out the Aragon Ballroom and it's on MTV. So
yeah.
All of a sudden, everybody who picked on me wanted to be my friend. Suddenly blue hair was cool, you know?
Oh, that's amazing.
That's weird. It's very weird.
Where did you grow up? Where does that seem?
I was born in the city and I grew up in a place called Lockport.
Okay.
Maybe like 40 minutes south of here.
So you were literally like the Charles Atlas ad from the back of the magazine. It's like when you're kicking in some little kid's face, and the next it's like, I'm going to stuff you in a fucking trash can.
Well, I think, I mean, yeah, that's I wouldn't stuff anybody in a trash can, but it prevented myself and others from being continually stuffed in trash cans.
Well, because, you know, much like Peter Parker, all of a sudden you had this sort of weird responsibility. Like, you had greater power. Did you understand at the time that you had to use it responsibly, or did you want to go back and just beat the shit out of everybody?
No, I don't like fighting, is contrary to popular belief. Getting punched in the face is still one of my least favorite things in the world, so it's not like I would go around and pick fights. I would certainly be quick to defend myself or my friends.
Yeah.
So if me and you were pals and somebody was stuffing you in a garbage can, I would help you.
I would appreciate that. No, I would definitely need the help. I mean, I tried it, you know, later in my, like, early in my 30s, I was like, you know, I think I need to start exercising because I don't want to hit 50 someday and then just feel like, oh,
diabetes.
My body's just giving up. My body's just giving up.
We were talking about him before you started recording. My friend Cole Cabana, he said, "Do you box?"
I do. Well, I boxing was part of my training for a long time.
It was hard stuff, man.
And then I kind of edged off it a little bit because my wrists were starting to hurt. If I'm exercising responsibly, and my trainer's amazing. Like, he's the best. His philosophy is always like, you know, you have to leave better, feeling better than when you got here. Which is, some days that means we stretch, some days, you know, we do some light stuff, but then other days, when I'm punching, it's hard for me to not punch as hard as I can.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, when my wrists are sore, I go, there are so many other things I can do to exercise than to hit something.
Yeah, but it's fun.
And I know it is fun. I think the surprising thing is, if I were to get into a fight, weirdly, if I could remember everything without being thrown off, I could probably hit someone pretty hard.
You just start throwing combinations.
Combinations. If they would stand still.
Look, most people in street fights always think it's just like a one-punch ordeal.
No.
No,
because someone's going to, you know, but then I also know that it's never going to be like a gentleman's boxing match.
Nope.
Like if someone attacks you or someone goes after you, they're going to go for your knees, or they're going to like try to smack your face into the ground. Like, there's no, every great martial arts or trainer or everyone that I've ever talked to has said the last thing you want to do is get into a fight ever.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know.
No, it's not
worth it.
Yeah, and you don't know, it sounds stupid. You don't know who's got a knife.
Exactly.
You know, a gun.
Yeah. And you don't want to accidentally kill someone. Like,
no.
If someone, and you smash.
I don't even want to punch anybody. You know?
Yeah.
And then they find out who you are and then they want money and. Yeah. Good
it's
God.
like Chuck Norris, you know, like for I had to just have a bodyguard around just for people that tried to kick the shit out of him. Like,
right.
You're not so tough. Like,
yeah.
Oh, come on, give me a fucking break.
Yeah,
can't you just enjoy Walker, Texas Ranger?
I love that show. Who doesn't?
Walking Dead, Texas Ranger.
Wow,
Chuck Norris.
Wow, maybe if the show drops off in like 10 years, we can start doing.
We can reboot it.
We can do cameo guest appearances. You get Steven Seagal on there.
Oh. By that point, we'll have perfected the Chuck Norris bot. Like, science, within 10 years, we'll have a Chuck Norris bot.
He's probably a robot already.
He does look a little robot-y.
Have you seen Expendables 2?
No, how is it?
It's the worst best movie you'll ever see.
I mean, you kind of know what you're getting.
Yeah,
with it.
Absolutely. And like, yeah. I went with a bunch of buddies, and we... hooted and hollered. One of my friends is a local stand-up comedian. His name's Marty DeRosa. Free plug for Marty.
Nice.
And we went, and he was killing me throughout the movie. He was saying the most ridiculous shit, you know? And to me, that's the kind of... I hate when people talk during the movies, so luckily we're the only ones in there.
That's not good for Expendables 2.
Yeah, and he kept... he just kept... throwing one-liners, and he elbowed me at one point and said that was supposed to be Patrick Swayze's role, and like
they all those guys, this fucking kills me, but they've all had so much work done,
yeah,
that they all just look like old lady dolls. They look like dolls of old ladies.
Well, to get back to Chuck Norris, he doesn't do shit in the movie. He literally walks towards people with two big machine guns and just shoots.
Yeah.
And like he's got a couple of lines, but like he doesn't do anything. You don't see him run. You know, he doesn't briskly jog. He doesn't move. He just kind of slowly walks. And then of course I had to Google it, and he's like almost 80 years old.
Well, if you're Chuck Norris, the people walk into the bullets for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you don't have to. I didn't realize he was almost 80.
He's pretty old. I'll probably be wrong about him being almost 80, but he's at least 70.
He's much closer to 80 than we are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. I feel like we should high five after that. Hell yeah.
That's where you have to, like, as you start getting, like, well into your 30s and then early 40s, it's like that's where you take the victories. You're like, well, I'm not 80. It's always so comforting to talk to someone like Mel Brooks, where you go, he's 86 years old, wow, and he's still fires on all cylinders. And then you go, all right, you know, maybe... Do you feel the crushing weight of time on your shoulders always, or does that not
me?
You're not thinking about that.
No,
stuff?
I feel the crushing weight of what I do for a living on my shoulders.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, literally on my shoulders. Stuff hurts, man. I gotta figure out what's next.
How did you ultimately get into wrestling?
I was a nerd. Obviously, I liked stuff that. I pigeonholed myself, and I found myself attracted to everything that everybody else hated. Mm-hmm. You know, so like punk rock, wrestling. I'm straight edge, so I don't drink or do drugs. So yeah. I really just kind of alienated myself in a way. But wrestling,
the circle gets smaller and smaller of people that you can hang out with.
Absolutely, people who I have like a lot of things in common with. But I just fell in love with wrestling when I was a kid. I watched Roddy Piper smash a coconut over Jimmy Snuka's head, and I was just like, this is the wildest thing. You know, as a kid, I thought a couple things. That's awesome. This guy, he's not the biggest guy. I was never the biggest guy. So I could probably do what he does. And all he does is just talk shit and get away with it.
Yeah.
And that fascinated me. And that was my defense mechanism. Even when people were punching me in the face constantly, I was still mouthing off to him, you know?
Yeah.
But I also thought they were all millionaires. I was like, this guy, he's on television, obviously. Like,
he
has all this money. And
But it doesn't really work that way, I don't think. I mean, my understanding is that there's this sort of this unified body of world wrestling, kind of, and I might be wrong, and so I invite you to correct me as much as possible. But essentially just owns everything. And then just kind of like, okay, you can be this guy and you can be this guy. And do they sort of pull the strings, or how does that work?
It's like that now. I think I got a lot of friends who are in bands. And I think what you do and being in a band and being a wrestler, there's a lot of parallels.
Sure.
You don't start off on The Tonight Show.
No.
You don't start off and get your own comedy special.
Right.
You know, I paid some guys a bunch of money to basically beat me up. You know, they teach you how to fall the right way. They teach you how to run the ropes, and then the rest is kind of up to you. You know, I don't think anybody ever taught you how to write a joke. There's really probably there's probably no formula. You know what I mean? I think it's your passion and what you bring to the table that allows you to do what you do.
Sure.
You know, I learned all the fundamental stuff, and then I jumped in a car with a couple of buddies, and we just drove all over hell and creation. Whoever would let us work there, we'd work there. I mean, for free. We, you know.
How does it work? How does it work in wrestling where you... I mean, because with stand-up, you go, okay, you know, I'm opening for someone. All right, I'm middling, so I get to do the feature spot, so I get to do 25 minutes. Okay, now I get to headline, but I'm headlining in shitty clubs. Oh, I'm headlining in better clubs. Like, who decides, or how do you, what is it that you do to sort of rise the ranks?
I think the parallels are all the same. You wind up seeing a lot of the same people working in different territories,
yeah,
so to speak, you know. And a lot of people just stay where they're at. And there's a lot of guys in Memphis, they were just Memphis wrestlers.
Yeah.
But we would drive, you know, for a Saturday night show, we would work like maybe a Friday in Louisville, Kentucky, mm-hmm. for a Saturday shot, drive all the way to Philly to do a show in Philly, and then have to drive to Wisconsin to do like a 4 o'clock show on a Sunday.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, it's brutal, and you get your name out there, you bust your ass, you work hard, and people would trade tapes, you know, fans on the internet and stuff like that would trade tapes, and you get more well-known, more promoters call you, more promoters want you. We want the CM Punk Colt Cabana match at this show, and then next thing you know, you're wrestling in Cleveland, you're going out to California, and then the next thing you know, somebody offers you a plane ticket, and you're like, holy shit, I'm flying, you know what I mean? Like, this is amazing, and then you just, you work your way up, you know, and that's all I ever did.
Do you find that, actually, the more you talk about it, the more it feels like it's almost exactly like comedy.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
Because you're sort of crafting your stage persona, mm-hmm. so to speak. And you go through, is there any part of it that's like, well, this is more me, or this character is the opposite of me, or this is my voice, or it just feels like a natural extension of who I am?
Well, I like being a bad guy, because I think it is a natural extension of who I am. You know, I can. It's a lot easier for me to get people to hate me than it is for them to like me.
It's kind of fun, too.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely.
You always remember the bad guy in a movie.
I love being able to push people's buttons. I love being able to walk to the ring and see somebody and know, like, what I can say to them that's going to get them so pissed off that they, you know, they spit on me or, you know, something horrible, you know. I mean, guys back in the day used to get stabbed. You know, they used to follow them out of the building and, you know, slash their tires, set their car on fire.
You mean like the fans would, or you mean like the fans?
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not saying all, but some of the wrestling fans are kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
Like the guys who are the worst to me on you know, social media, or just say like, you're a fucking, I want to beat the shit out. Like, you kind of look at their profile, and it's always the same kind of dude.
Me and you need to sit and just scroll through our at mentions and just read them to each other.
I want like some sort of a Freakonomics thing where we track data points, because the thing is that a lot of times I want to tell them, like, you don't even understand how predictable of a data point you are.
Yeah.
But it's always like, it's like a
fuck
white,
you pussy.
Yeah, exactly. It's usually like a white doughy dude. The eyebrows maybe be almost migrating together. You know, there's a bunch of wrestlers that they're following.
Or it's an egg.
Or an egg.
It's always an egg.
And everything is like, fuck you, you're a pussy, or come on. You just need to be hugged. And someone didn't hug you.
The funny thing when it comes to that with me is what I do is, obviously, you know, people don't like to use the word fake, but yeah, it is what it is. It's predetermined. You know what I mean? Like, so what you see on TV, you know, the stuff I'm doing, it's not reality, but I still have people, you know what I mean? Like, there's a really weird...
They think it's a documentary.
Interesting cross-section of people that, you know, there's the smart wrestling fans that will just be like, oh, you're boring.
Right.
You know, like, they try to intelligently insult me if that's possible. But then there's the people who 100% believe it. And sometimes they're little kids. But when I click on that picture and I look, and it's like it's a grown woman or a grown man, and they're saying these most horrible things, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me laugh. It's kind of funny. Well, it also makes me tremble for the future.
Those are really funny when you find someone that tells you, like, when they say, like, you suck, you piece of shit, I hope you fucking choke on glass. And then you look at their profile, and then the description is just like, just living for the Lord and loving my kids.
Yeah.
Like, and so sometimes I'll write back and go, how is that living for the Lord and loving your kids?
Yeah.
And they're like, my kids don't read Twitter yet. Fuck you. And you're like, oh,
but
my
how
God.
Do you have time to tweet, you know, with your Jesus infatuation and your children?
I mean, come on. But it is. I'm glad to see that it is all totally parallel. And you know, a lot of the wrestling fans I meet are really great, and I think people really do understand. But it's interesting now, when wrestling first started, and I was a kid, of course, you know, there was no internet, and there was no, you know, and
the,
so
the good old days.
The good old days. And so we would watch wrestling and have the debates of, like, it can't be real. Of course it's real. He hit him with a chair.
Right.
He jumped off it. You can't fake that.
Right.
But now, because there's so much peeking behind the curtain of everything, it's interesting that people know that it's like, well, this is a show.
Yeah.
This is not, it's like, you know, luchadors, you know.
But it's, you'd be so surprised, because it still shocks the hell out of me that people will say stuff to me all the time that blurs the lines. And I'm looking at them like, okay, you just told me that you know that it's predetermined, but then you said I'm a real bastard for what I did. I don't,
yeah,
you know, and then that's when you slowly back away. All right.
There's almost sort of a microcosm of like a supreme being and determinism, and do any of the choices matter because the outcome is already set in stone? Like there's almost a weirdly religious parallel to wrestling, to the rest of the world. And yet, no matter what happens, are you pretty much fine with whatever they say, or do you get any say, or is there pushback, or you know?
No,
when they say you have to do
there.
This?
When I think when you're at a certain level, when you're one of the guys that's kind of pulling the cart, so to speak, and yep. you know you're selling a ton of merchandise, and you're one of the guys, so to speak. If they ever said anything to me that I would be 100% against, you know, they'd be fine with it. It's not the dictatorship I think a lot of people think it is.
Yeah.
For I think a lot of lower level guys, they're just so piss pants afraid that they're going to lose their job over any little thing. I don't think they would say no to anything.
Yeah.
But when you know you're in a position such as I am, and I whatever power I have, I don't wield. You know, maliciously, but there's hardly ever anything that I've said no to.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, as a bad guy, especially, I'm getting shot down a lot more with my ideas because I want to do all these horrible, horrible things. You
like
know?
What? Like what's
and,
like what
I mean,
you want to do?
And we are a PG show. So, you know, half the time, just a couple of things that I didn't think I would get away with that I did. You'd have to YouTube it to completely understand. I sang happy birthday to Rey Mysterio's little daughter when she was like 7 years old and she was in the ring and they were like celebrating his daughter's birthday. And I came out and like it was a really uncomfortable, really uncomfortable situation because like this guy's with his family and his daughter, you know, and
yeah.
I was just like, what are you going to do about it, right? Because if you do anything about it, I'm going to beat you up in front of your kid. You know what I mean? And
that's so amazing.
You put the good guy against the wall in that way, you know, with his family out there. And like that actually, I got a lot of death threats for that. And it doesn't sound bad as I'm vocalizing it to you now. But if
no,
you-
and actually, I totally understand because I think one of the things that I will say is really interesting to me about the way that wrestling is written and the way the characters develop and is that, you know, I think a lot of film could take a lesson from the kind of emotional sine wave, I guess, of, you know, you have to create enough motivation to want someone to get the shit beaten out of them.
That's the idea.
So then you're constantly taking the emotional center of the fans and shifting it right and shifting it left and forcing them to take this emotional journey, which is
right.
really interesting.
No, that's absolutely, that's my job, is to get people to want to, you know, see somebody beat the hell out of me.
Yeah.
A lot of the times they themselves want to try to beat the hell out of me, but, you know, jumping in the ring is the wrong idea, everybody. Yeah, so, you know, I think everybody can relate to that. There's a lot of people who have children. They, you know, they have a mom and a dad, and they're celebrating this little girl's birthday, and then here comes this guy with his gang.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I looked like Jesus at the time with this long beard, this long hair. Like, I was pretty creepy at the time. The last thing that I pitched that I thought Vince was going to be like, no way, you can't do that. It was Jerry Lawler just had a heart attack like 3-4 months ago. He came back after 2 months to resume his commentary duties, and I was all over it. And we faked a heart attack in the ring while I was talking shit to him.
That's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah, and like there's people that 100% they're wrestling fans, they're the smart fans, and they know, and that was too much. That was just too much. They should have just let Jerry had his good moment. And
yeah.
That's not the idea.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm a bad guy. I saw this perfect opportunity to piss a lot of people off, you know? And Vince let me do it. He was like, that's a great idea. And I was just like, this is amazing.
I love that Lawler, like, he's such a pro and he's been around so long. Like, oh, yeah, that's actually a pretty good idea.
I don't think he couldn't have thought for 1 second that he... And the thing is, Lawler ran Memphis for years and years and years. If this was still Memphis... If we weren't PG, I would have been claiming I killed Jerry Lawler with a heart punch. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, he would have been all over that, and we would have built for like some big CM Punk Jerry Lawler, you know, cage match or something like that. Like that's, you know, and so people nowadays saying that we exploited the art. Like, yeah, of course we did. Like, look what we do. You know,
what's the ridiculous, like, what's the line of where it gets like, okay, that's too silly. Like, you know, for instance, Jerry Lawler has a heart attack, they take him off, then you kind of follow back into the nurse's quarters or whatever, and then you start fighting with the orderlies or the doctor. Like, is there a line where you're like, okay, that's too silly, no one's gonna believe that that would actually happen?
I don't know, because I mean that was a serious deal, you know. I mean, the guy did, he had a heart attack ringside doing commentary right after I got done wrestling him. And you know, like they were working on him, they took him in an ambulance, and like everybody thought that was it. That was the last we were ever going to see of him. So, but I mean, if it was a planned thing, I don't think anything's too silly. I think if you don't plan on going too far in a lot of ways in life, then you're not going to go far at all.
What is the sustainability of a wrestling career? What do you think is the essential element that, you know, do you have to keep going from good to bad to good to bad? Or because if you're bad, Is that a limited resource? Like, you can only, at a certain point, you're like, okay, he's a dickhead.
I think you have to evolve. I think it's just evolution of your character. I don't think there's been anybody who's just been on TV doing the same thing for a sustainable amount of years. You know? And I think the average career in the WWE is like three years, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's a big turnaround, you know? And the guys who I think make it to the top and stay there are the ones who constantly evolve their character. And it's not necessarily flipping from good to bad. You just, there's changes, you know what I mean? A perfect example would be a guy like The Undertaker.
Sure.
You know, he was like this total cartoon character when he started.
The Undertaker.
Right. Like, he was, you know, I don't know, he was essentially a zombie. That's the whole reason I thought
that was
cool.
A great character.
Right. But you can't do that, you know, he's been here for over 20 years. He couldn't have been that same guy that debuted in 91 or whatever for 20 years, you know,
right?
What I mean, so he evolved, you know. And guys get hurt and they go away and they come back 6 months later and it's like all of a sudden, oh, you we forgot about you, we love you again, you know.
Yeah,
it's fresh again. You gotta evolve. You can't do the same set.
No,
I mean, could you imagine doing the same set for 20 years?
I would kill myself. Some people do, like, there are some comics who, like, you know, they just kind of get their set and they just travel.
I could see Don Rickles doing, you know, and I would go see Don Rickles.
I would love to see Rickles live. Rickles is one of the guys I've never seen live.
Really?
But I met him at a party once and he was amazing.
I bet.
Such a great guy. He's like, come here. And he just started talking about comedy. Here's what you got to do. People know that when I say stuff, it's not that I'm really mean. Like, he just laid out the whole thing. Pretty much the same way that you're talking about. Like,
brilliant.
Rickles has his wrestling character.
Yeah.
Which is that guy.
God bless the old timers, man.
Right?
Oh, man. I could sit in a room and listen to anybody who's excellent at their craft. Like, I could listen to them for hours. And I, going back to it, I think there's so many parallels between what I do, what you do, you know, tons of friends in
bands.
There's
no question. There's no question, because you have to figure out who you are and what you want to say and develop that, and then figure out how you can sort of mine that into what the final product is.
Right.
It's an odd, although I do feel like you have the ability to really be more diametrically opposite to who you really are as a way to sort of live. You're sort of living vicariously through your own character in a way,
yeah,
sort of, where you get to be that guy that's not you, but maybe it's still kind of...
I kind of lucked out in that way. Yeah, I'm not like a hello everybody, I'm an astronaut. You
right.
know, I'm not playing this far out character. You know, and when I developed the straight edge thing, like, you know, because I've pretty much been straight edge my entire life. You know what I mean? So it never occurred to me to use that in wrestling. When I was wrestling, I was just, you know, I just started wrestling because I wanted to wrestle.
Because you probably, I wonder, did you feel like it was just too close to yourself?
No, I just didn't.
I just didn't think about it.
I didn't think about
it. That's,
you know what I mean?
It's too close to yourself that you just don't think. Like,
no.
Oh, I should probably do that.
It was my girlfriend at the time, Natalie, who was just like, dude, everybody hates us because we're straight edge. You know what I mean? Like, you tell anybody out on the street, like, hey, I don't drink or smoke, and they're like, why? What? you know what I mean? Or the second thing is they immediately think that you are some recovering heroin addict.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, oh, you know. But no, and then I was wrestling a lot in West Allis, Wisconsin, at a Knights of Columbus, and I think the main draw for this Knights of Columbus was that they sold like dollar beers.
Yeah.
So they would have this wrestling show once a month or twice a month, and they would put 500 people in this little unfinished basement of a Knights of Columbus, and there'd be like a riot every goddamn night I was out there, because I would go out there and I would just be like, hey, listen, I'm straight edge. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. And here, all you fat Wisconsin, you know what I mean? And like, there's no guardrails. There's just people with all, you know, two-fisting beers. They start dumping beer on me, and I would roll out of the ring and just sock somebody in the face, and just like all hell would break loose. Like, I was like, oh, I'm really onto something here. This is.
That sounds kind of fucking amazing. Because at the same time, within the body of this character, you actually get to express this social commentary that you probably actually believe. And that's really gratifying.
And I think alcohol is a powerful drug. You take something like pro wrestling and you put it smack dab in the middle of people who are just, I mean, shit hammered.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, I can do that. You know, I can't tell you how many times people would just get up, walk into the ring, and it would just fucking just be curtains for them.
Well, but your job is to make it look seamless,
though. Right, and my job is to make them mad, but you add that. Without, you know, you throw alcohol in the mix and it's anything goes, man.
I know.
Those are the lawless CM Punk days.
Our listeners on the show have heard me talk about this a million times, but I've been sober for almost 10 years. But it wasn't really, I didn't choose to do it as, you know, like, I think alcohol is, you know, like, it wasn't really, it was more that I knew that I was really irresponsible with it.
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, I shouldn't do this anymore. But you say you're pretty much your whole life.
Yeah.
What was the sort of underlying?
The basis for it was my dad was an alcoholic. That was it.
Yeah.
You know, and never like in a violent way, you know what I mean? But just like, there was always cartons of cigarettes, and there was always a case of Old Style, mm-hmm. or many cases of Old Style.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And sometimes there weren't Christmas presents. So
right.
In my mind, I was like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, the ultimate bummer for a kid, like just whatever. And just seeing my dad the way, you know, the way he was and stuff like that, I just made up my mind. I was like, well, I'm staying away from that shit.
But don't you think there's an interesting personality trait that some people have? Because it's usually either, when you live in an extreme situation like this, it's usually one or the other. You either become that, or you become, like, my dad is a casual drinker, but he drinks almost every day. Like, he just has a few beers,
right.
You know? But his dad, he and his dad had a terrible relationship. And as a result, he and I have an amazing relationship because
right.
he wanted, but it totally could have gone the other way. Yeah,
I firmly believe like your parents and your surroundings will make you who you are, whether that's good or bad. You know,
what do you think that is? What do you think it is that makes some people take the path of light and other people take the path of darkness?
I don't know. I intelligence maybe. I don't know. I would like to think that, you know, because I pretty much at 15. You know, not only did I think I knew everything, obviously, but I had a pretty good handle on who I was and stuff like that. And the guy you're talking to right now isn't really that much different than that 15-year-old. I mean, look at my house. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, this is what my room looked like when I was 15. This place is just bigger.
Isn't it nice that we live in a time where we can be grown-ups and still, like, there wasn't anything that was like, okay, I have to put the Wolfman paintings away because
no.
I'm an adult. Like, that we still get to enjoy this extended adolescence where we go, hey, I really love this stuff, and why shouldn't I have it?
I predicted this boom probably when I was 15. The first job I ever had was at a comic shop. So, you know, you sit around with your buddies all day, and you just bullshit. And I was like, someday, our generation is going to run things. You know what I mean? We're going to have cars named after Transformers. Where, you know, you're going to get like the Nissan, you know, Soundwave and stuff like that. And
that would be awesome.
I think we're partially living in that now. I mean, you know, look at the Nolan trilogy, the Batman flicks. We get to go see Avengers. You know, all
yeah.
this awesome stuff is happening. And it was stuff I dreamed about when I was a kid.
I did the WGN Morning News this morning, and this Pat, I think the sports guy, was really cool and super into Dark Knight and super into Walking Dead. And one of the anchors was this really nice lady, but she just didn't understand the Batman thing. She was like, what is it? What are you guys, 15? We're like, no, you don't understand. The Batman franchise should not have been able to be resurrected. Like, it was so murdered. Right. And just trying to explain to her, like, this is why this is awesome. And she just couldn't connect with it.
Some people don't get it. I'm proud to say, I'm still 15 at heart, man. Yeah, absolutely.
That's sort of the luxury that we have, yeah. I think, of our generation. I mean, in a way, we're sort of culturally spoiled. Whereas, you know, our parents or our grandparents, it was like, you have to work. You know, this is a post-war era. There's no time for comic books. There's no time
for
that.
Go to the factory.
Yeah. You get married. You have kids. You know, maybe you go to church on Sundays and then go to college and major in something practical. Right. I don't even know what that means anymore.
No. I never know what that meant. School was not for me.
Do you feel like we're culturally adrift, or do you feel like that this is a golden age?
Oh, geez. I don't know. It depends on who you interact with, I suppose. You know, I mean, because there's for all the good people that you talk to that are into the same things and doing good things, there's the, I don't know, I guess the lazy ones. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to articulate it correctly, but... I could definitely see how the generation ahead of us can look at us and be like, you know, oh, I'm wearing a comic book T-shirt, so I'm a slacker. You know,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, I get that. I can see that because I see people all the time that, you know, they're not doing anything. There's actually a group. Have you ever encountered Krusty Punks?
No.
My absolute mortal enemies in my neighborhood. There's a group of Krusty Punks that around spring and summertime they come around. They wear these weird quasi uniforms. They all wear like these green, drabby clothes, and they looks like they rub dirt on their faces, and they go and they panhandle for change.
Oh, that's not what I was hoping it would be.
No,
I was hoping it was a punk movement based on Krusty the Clown.
No.
Hey, I'm going to kick your fucking head in.
No, but, and then, you know, and these kids, they panhandle for change all day, and then they go to their Linkin Park, you know, condos and live with mommy and daddy. But every time I see them out, they're disruptive, they're rude, they're ignorant, they make stupid signs. It's not just like, you know, hungry, need food. They write stupid junk on their signs, and, you know, they're my mortal enemy. If I had an enemy in a comic book, it would be these.
Now, do you feel like... that because we're grown-ups, we just don't understand them. I already feel like there's that, you know, like I see teenagers now and I go, oh yeah, I get it now. I get why older people when I was a kid were like, you don't fucking know what you're talking about. I'd be
yeah,
like,
yeah,
why 100%. Are they so mean to me? I'm just being myself, man. You don't get it. And now I feel like, oh, I don't get it. I really don't get it. I'm on the other side.
You feel old.
You do feel old, yeah, because, and I really understand why. You know, I always thought when I was a teenager, like, look, when I get older, I'm going to understand how to talk to teenagers because I'm a teenager now. But some sort of a weird thing happens, and I guess it's just because you're older, they biologically do not want to connect with you.
Absolutely.
And it just, did you watch Louis C.K.'s show?
Yeah.
He's an amazing episode where his niece comes to stay with him, and he just tries to talk to her, and she's just like, will not respond to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, oh yeah, that's exactly, they're just programmed to go, fuck you, you don't know me and you don't know what you're talking about.
And I was very much like that when I was a kid. You know, I didn't want to talk to any grown-ups, you know. I just want to talk to people that were my age or whatever. Now, yeah, I definitely feel old. I felt really old. I think it might have been the most recent Tosh.0, and he made it like a One Direction joke. And I didn't even laugh, and I was just like...
What's One Direction?
I know what One Direction is. It's the next boy band.
Yeah.
You know, but I was just like, he's not even aiming at my demographic, you know? Like,
right.
I felt like last week's episode, he was telling jokes for me, and now he went One Direction. And
last week was New Kids on the Block.
Right.
Then NSYNC the week after, and then One Direction. He's just evolving.
I guess. Yeah. I'm old.
Well, they're not for us. This is one of those groups where I'm like, I saw one thing about them, and then all of a sudden, they're on all these billboards in Los Angeles, and they're everywhere. And you're like, who the fuck?
You know who I heard about them? How I heard about them first?
No.
Twitter. Somebody tweeted me and said, "Fuck you, you pussy. I bet you like One Direction."
The guy who's typing that, what I hope happens, and I know this doesn't happen, but what I hope happens is they type it and send it, and then later they're going, hey, you know, I sent this thing to CM Punk, and I told him he was gay because of One Direction, and then his friends go, yeah, and?
Always the gay thing.
Yeah, I don't always know why they always think
that's the most insulting thing.
I was going to say, like, I wish I were cool enough to be gay.
I just always want to reply, hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with being gay.
Yeah, why is that an insult?
Yeah, you would say that.
No, yeah. Seriously, guys, enough with the you're gay dot dot dot. It's not an insult, and you're just a piece of shit.
And spell it right. It's not Y-O-U-R.
Please.
There's an apostrophe R-E at
Please
the end
understand
of it.
Contractions versus
God
possessives.
Damn it. It drives me batshit crazy.
I love the you're an idiot, Y-O-U-R, an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, you are the embodiment of irony, yeah, and you don't even understand.
I'm a grammar Nazi. That's all I do on Twitter is correct people.
It's correct people's grammar. You yeah should... You know what we should do is make a series of videos with you on the Nerdist channel of CM Punk's grammar guide.
I would love to.
We'll just have you go through and correct people. Okay, here's why this is wrong.
Well, if you feel strongly about this and you're going to try to insult somebody and prove your point, we should at least grammatically go through it and make sure it's correct.
Do you need another dangling participle? Because this one's about to fall off here.
I could wear a graduation cap. Yeah.
Well, do you ever see yourself going into any kind of broadcasting? Because you're... I'm clearly smart and very articulate, and it feels like if you want it and you have, you can talk. So, do you feel like that's a direction that you might, a one direction that you might go in?
I don't think it's anything I'd actively pursue. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not looking for a job, obviously. So, I don't know. And the thing about wrestling is I've had this long career already. You know, I've been doing this for 15 years. I've been with WWE for, it's like almost eight, you know. So I'm not really. Obviously, I can't just sit on my couch. I'm gonna have to do something once this is all over.
Yeah.
And it's a rough job. So it could be over whenever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if opportunities kind of show up, I would take them as they come. But I'm not sending applications into to radio stations.
Did you watch The Wrestler and be like, oh fuck?
No, I actually, that's actually one question that a lot of us probably get a lot, like if we like that or not. Like, you know, like I did like it. A lot of people within my company hate the fact that I say that I like that movie because they don't want people to believe like that's what happens.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a wrestling thing. I think it's an irresponsible thing, you know.
Yeah.
The character in that movie wasn't in the position he was in because he was a wrestler. He was in that position because he was irresponsible.
Right.
You know. Are a lot of wrestlers irresponsible? Fuck yeah. You know, but I think that's the majority of the world, you know what I mean? Like we always get a target drawn on us by media outlets when somebody dies. Because oftentimes somebody dies because it's a drug overdose or something like
sure
that, you know? That's no secret. But did they overdose because they were a wrestler, or did they overdose because they were just an irresponsible
right
human being? You know what
well
I mean?
Well, it's a much better looking headline to say,
yeah,
wrestling killed, dot, 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 as opposed
yeah, absolutely
to, this individual made a poor choice and probably could have gotten help sooner, and it's sad that no one helped them. And then they just have to vilify someone.
Yeah, and I understand it. It still makes me, you know... despise Nancy Grace. That's all.
Okay. But you can't... would you ever go on and talk to her? Would you ever go on...
I'd give it a shot. She doesn't let anybody get a word in edgewise, but I think I'd be able to take her.
You just have someone off to shoot her with a trank dart? And it's like, as she starts to, you know, as it starts to take effect, you'd be like, now, you're gonna listen to me. Wake her up.
Yeah.
What do you think is the ultimate message that you have? Or, like, is there something... Do you feel a responsibility in the position you're in that a lot of people listen to what you say and a lot of people are influenced by you? Do you feel a responsibility to put some sort of a mark into the world?
It's weird because when I'm a bad guy, I see no limits and I don't want to, you know, WWE as a company does a lot of great things. You know what I mean? I do a ton of make-a-wishes. You know, I mean, John Cena does twice as many as I
yeah
do, and he's the good guy. So you're going to see that. You
yeah
know what I mean? They're going to be like, John Cena just did his 300th wish.
Yeah.
I'm the bad guy, so it's not like I'm going to say no to doing a make-a-wish.
Yeah.
I don't want to broadcast that I'm doing it, because then people are watching, oh, he's not such a bad guy. You know what I mean? But
or
I don't want
need to keep the character.
I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want people to hate my guts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We also are heavily involved in like this anti-bullying campaign,
sure,
Be a Star, which I think is great. But as a bad guy, I don't want to be like, hey guys, you know, don't be a bully. Because what I am on TV is a bully.
Yeah.
So this is totally weird.
Well, that's interesting then, because do you feel any responsibility for perpetuating some of that, but like the bully mythos because of, you know, because it sucks that, again, that people watch and they go, yeah, that guy, he's real and he's doing those things.
I think I have to take some of the responsibility, but ultimately, in the end, the bad guy gets what's coming to him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's theater. That's the story.
You hope that's the case, and then at least you can sort of draw the parallel and go, well, you know, when the Lone Ranger, like, if you see, like, if you watch, like, a Western and someone gets shot up and then a kid, like, shoots a gun, you can't, again, it's like, you can't blame the movie, like, that person.
And that's where everybody says, well, that's what the parents are for, you know, to try to help explain all that. But, you know, that's got to be the hardest job in the world, being a parent.
You know? I don't know. Yeah, I don't have kids. You don't have kids either, do you?
Nope.
Nope.
None that I'm aware of.
Well, I say this obnoxious thing sometimes. My sister-in-law, you know, when we hung out in Nashville last week after I did the shows there, was like, "You should have kids." They just had a baby. My brother is a year older than I am, and he and his wife just had a baby. And she's like, "You need to have kids." And I'm like, "You just had one. Why do you need everyone else to have a kid?" And then I said something that...
Get somebody to play with.
I said something that I think people with kids would think is obnoxious, where I said, "My career is my child right now." But what I meant by that is, that's where my focus is.
Right.
And it wouldn't be fair to bring a life into this world knowing that what I'm actually focused on is this other thing. Like, that's not a reasonable... So I'm not going to do it. And I feel like that's a responsible choice.
No, I think it's a very responsible choice. I'm on the road over 320 days a year. You know what I mean? And I look across the locker room sometimes at the guys who have... They're married.
Yeah.
You know, they have kids. You know, for all intents and purposes, I could lock my door and be gone, and I could not come back for 6 months. You know what I mean? I couldn't do that if I had a kid. So that's got to be hard. And yeah, I think if I ever did have kids, I would have to not be wrestling to do it.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want to neglect my kid the way I felt like, you know what I mean? I got neglected. You know, so I'd be like your dad. I'd have a great relationship with my kids.
Well, my dad and I had an okay relationship when I was younger. It got better when we both got older.
Yeah,
my dad's great, but he always sort of wanted to be the buddy dad. You know,
really?
And yeah, as opposed because he had such a shitty, like I said, he had such a shitty relationship with his dad that he didn't want to. You know, he wanted to be the, like, we're friends. Hey, come on,
have a beer.
Yeah, he wanted to be have a beer dad. Which is a little bit different than, you know, like, firm but loving, you know, not disciplinarian, but certainly, like, well, there were structures and there were rules. It was sort of like, hey, you know, let's just be pals, which is a slightly different dynamic.
Yeah.
I'm glad we have that now.
Yeah. Nobody just gives you a manual, right? You have a kid, like, and anybody can have one.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody can have a kid. And there's a lot of people that have kids that shouldn't have kids.
It's Keanu Reeves' speech in Parenthood. He's like, you need a license to fish, you need a license to hunt, but they'll let any asshole be a dad. And you're like, that's right, Keanu.
It's true. It's the smartest thing he's ever said.
Well, he didn't even write it. Where are you in between right now that you're home for one of the 40 days a year?
Well, the only reason I'm home is because I just had knee surgery, so... It's not like I'm missing a whole lot of shows though. I'm leaving Saturday. We got a pay-per-view in Brooklyn on Sunday, and then we're doing Monday Night Raw on Monday, obviously, and then we're taping Monday Night Raw because Christmas is on Monday this year.
Yeah.
So we actually get Christmas off.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
But you're going to broadcast on Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. The show will be on. We're just taping it on Tuesday in Pittsburgh, and then traditionally, the day after Christmas, 26th, 27th, 20th, 29th, and 30th, there's always five shows immediately after that.
Yeah.
I'm currently right now not cleared to do.
Okay.
So for the first time in my career, I'll have a stretch where I'm actually at home.
What are you going to do with yourself?
I don't know yet.
It's weird. It's freaky it's freaky when you're moved. You probably find this, but you only ever get sick when you stop.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you for jinxing me.
No, not Chris. You.
Jesus Christ.
What I'm saying is you're never going to pull out of this, but it's going to be fine.
Right.
No, but I mean, do you find that you only ever start to not feel good when the momentum slows, like when the momentum stops?
I'm that guy that doesn't get sick.
Yeah.
And if I do, I try to sleep you know, I try to knock it out. But now that I'm saying that and you've jinxed me, I'm sure I will have
that power.
I'm sure I'll get strep throat.
I do have that power.
You probably have given me strep throat.
I don't have strep throat. I just, I was sick last week.
There you go.
But I'm better. The only
thing... you're better, but you're still carrier, Chris.
I may. Here, I'm going to lick my finger. Just let me touch the corner of your eyeball.
I'm sure nothing good can happen.
What happened was that I haven't done so many stand-up shows in a really long time, and it was after the comedy special aired, and then I had to like go back on the road and start getting new material together. And so I've done, you know, like 10 shows in a week, and my throat just wasn't prepared. And since I got sick last week in Nashville, and I got better, but it's still like it totally chewed my throat up.
Yeah, it'll knock you on your ass.
It's no fun. So yeah. I feel fine, but I just sound like shit.
You talk for a living.
I do talk for a living. Yeah. About zombies. You love Walking Dead too. I see the Walking Dead. I see some trade paperbacks over there.
Yeah, I got my. Where's my Tor Johnson? My Tor Johnson-esque zombie tattoo.
Oh yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, that's another thing about me is tattoos. I'm such a nerd, and like everything. People always make fun of me because I have stupid tattoos, but tattoos to me are subjective. You know, like
I've always been afraid of them.
Oh, they hurt like hell.
I'm not afraid of the pain.
Don't ever do it.
I'm not afraid of the pain. I'm afraid of having something on my skin and then going, shit, that's not what I wanted. I can't get it off.
Marshmallow on a stick. There's a piece of pizza right there, Chris. There's pancakes. Yeah.
I didn't notice the grout was, Pez,
yeah,
was food.
It's yeah, absolutely. You know, everything I love, I tattoo on myself.
And is it... Was that a spur of the moment thing, or were you like, you know, I think...
No, I had a couple. This arm wasn't sleeved. I just had a couple of pieces, and then so I did the old school traditional tattoo, the stars and dots for filler, and some of the spaces were just too big. And my guy was like, "What do you want in there?" And I was like, "How about my favorite foods?" There's a cupcake. There's a double scoop of mint chocolate chip on a sugar cone. Yeah.
And did he add anything that, and you're like, that wasn't, I didn't like Pez, you put that in there.
He always tells me he's going to put balls on something. So I could have balls on something. I don't know.
Steve Jones has that.
You can't see it, but I got the banner down there when the,
oh yeah,
when there's no more room in hell.
Oh, that's on the dead will walk the earth.
Absolutely.
That's fucking sweet.
Yeah. Huge nerd.
I'm living vicariously through your tattoos.
That's fine.
Because I just don't. Yeah, my girlfriend has a bunch of tattoos, and she's like, you don't understand. Once you start, it's very difficult to stop.
It's really weird. Yeah absolutely. I don't know. Floodgates open. Something.
She just got one a couple months ago, and she was like, yeah, and this will be it for a while. And then within a week, she was looking, you know. Like she has on her Pinterest page, there's a whole bank of tattoos, and she's
the
like,
the older you get, the worse they fucking hurt.
I would imagine.
Oh, it's such a rotten idea. The worst is if you get like a really big one. If you know you're going to be sitting in a chair for 5 hours, it's just a horrible idea. That's 5 hours.
Yeah.
That's 5 hours of somebody hurting you.
She said the one that actually hurt the worst was like on the inside of her middle finger. Yeah. She got white ink of a USB symbol. Mm. And she said that one was actually...
That's a cute tattoo.
It was a cute, like, yeah. She and a bunch of her friends went out and did it.
No, I got three X's in there.
Oh, man.
Yeah, those sucked.
Yeah, I'm just not, I think I'm just...
Don't do it.
I don't think so.
I'll get one for you.
I appreciate that.
All right.
I appreciate that.
I'll get something really ridiculous for you.
just something out of my act.
What was the name of the pajamas you wear?
Kigurumi.
Kigurumi.
Well, I'm sure glad I just admitted that.
Yeah.
The thing is, they're really comfortable.
Dude, I never heard of them until you dropped that knowledge on me last night, and I was Googling it all night.
It's like wearing your spirit animal.
I barely slept, because you said you had like a purple wolf.
I have a purple wolf.
I was like, so that means they're not just sticking to like actual animals. You can get like wacky shit.
Totally wacky shit. You can get you can get robots, you can get dragons, you can get all sorts of...
And it's fucking Christmas time, so guess what I'm getting for Christmas,
and
buddy.
You have a nice Christmas tree over there. Why wouldn't you want to open your presents?
First tree ever. The first tree I hate Christmas. I'm the Grinch if there ever was one. I'm not a Christmas guy, but I figured since I'm actually going to be home because of this knee surgery deal, I bought a tree, and like a man, I carried it on my back and I walked it home.
With knee surgery?
Like 7 days post-knee surgery. I like to do stupid stuff like that.
Now, what is it? I flip back and forth on Christmas every year. Some years I'm like, I'm excited. And other years I'm like... They're just forcing you to feel an emotion at a certain time. Like, I get really...
That's a total Hallmark holiday to me because I'm not religious, you know. The people who like Christmas because, you know, Jesus and all that, more power to you. To me, it's presents.
Yeah.
That's really all it's ever been. And I will honestly do my shopping on Christmas Eve. I'll buy everything for everybody on Christmas Eve, yep. and I'll feel proud of myself because, wow, I just did that in 2 hours. Look at all this stuff.
I didn't spend weeks
and then
giving
I'll,
this
I'll
any thought.
Pay my little sisters to wrap everything.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about being in a position where you can...
Here.
I'll pay you. Please, just make this go away.
Wrap this shit. Get out of here.
Well, you could unwrap your presents in the Kigurumi when you actually get one.
Christmas.
They're fleecy.
Christmas morning.
I don't know what to say.
I'm getting one. I'm going to send you pictures of it.
Chloe.
You're going to get sick of me.
How about this one? Chloe was so all over me about that. Like, get one. You have to get one. I'm like, Chloe, you've got to drop this Kigurumi bullshit. I'm never going to get one. And then finally we were in Japantown. We were in Little Tokyo in Los Angeles. And I got one. And I put it on. And then within 5 minutes, I was like, this feels pretty good.
It's just like slippers. Yeah. Old people have their slippers.
Slippers for your body.
They're so comfortable.
Our nerdy generation, our slippers are going to be the fleecy Kigurumi.
Yeah, absolutely. We're raising the bar.
I hope someday, because I actually will start watching some of your... Like, once I have an emotional way into something, I'll watch. And now that you and I have become pals, now I'll watch wrestling. Because I'm like, oh, now I want to see what it's all about.
I apologize ahead of time.
No, it's fine. I mean, again, I had a history with when I was a kid. But I do want to see the Kigurumi make an appearance.
I can do it on TV.
Yes.
Maybe I will. See, I think I'm the only guy in the company who has the balls to do stuff like that. You know?
You need to beat the shit out of someone in a Kigurumi.
Wearing one? I'll try to fit it in.
In like a tanuki suit.
I'll try to fit one in.
What are you looking forward to movie-wise?
Django Unchained on Christmas. Yeah. And nobody ever used to go to movies on Christmas. It would be me and all my Jewish friends, and now everybody goes. So
yeah.
I think I got to buy tickets in advance. You know what? It's nothing I'm looking forward to, but you know what I wish Marvel would do is make a good Punisher movie?
Oh, yeah. Did you see the one that Thomas Jane...
I hated it.
Not the Thomas Jane Punisher movie. I guess maybe last year, he made a fan film with this director, Phil Juanu.
Really?
And it was basically like a 15-minute Punisher scene that I think was more in line with what you wanted from the Punisher.
Well, I just hate how they've always gotten it wrong. You know, and I'm talking with Marvel right now about writing something for them.
Oh, shit.
And I keep pitching Punisher ideas because to me, you know, and I don't know if I'm going to insult a writer out there or something like that. To me, I think it'd be pretty easy. You know, like this guy's motivation is the mob killed his family in front of him, and he was a murderer in Vietnam. So he's just gonna get revenge.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And like revenge is never a straight line. So to me, the Frank Castle character is super interesting, and I think I might be able to tackle that. You know what I mean? But I watch the Dolph Lundgren one, the Thomas Jane one, and the Ray Stevenson one. I love Ray Stevenson. I still want to punch him in the stomach for making that fucking movie.
Well, I think the problem is that I don't know why there's just that one element that they just can't seem to crack with the Punisher where you go, oh yeah, that totally, I get it. That totally makes sense. There's always a, come on.
But it's reasons like that which makes me continually nervous for, you know, Avengers. And I was biting my fingers like, oh, this is, what if this sucks? You know what I mean? And Avengers was amazing. They keep coming out with these awesome movies. And I really would like to see an excellent Punisher movie.
That's really... Can you talk about what you're going to write for Marvel or no?
I mean, it's in such an early stage of talking about it that we're just, you know, emails back and forth.
What else are you reading? Are there any other comics you're reading again?
I don't read single issues because I don't have the patience for it. Like, if I read something, I want to at least read a good chunk of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just did that with... I just read Walking Dead 105 last night, which just came out.
I can't do it.
And I'm like... Oh, and it just sort of ends, and I'm like, I have to wait till January.
Yeah, see, I can't do that. What am I reading right now? I mean, the typical stuff. Like, I go by who writes stuff, you know. So anything Brubaker does, anything Kirkman does.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Jason Aaron is one of my favorite writers. I just bought all that stuff today, the 100 Bullets and all that, the big ones.
Do you read on the iPad or do you like to touch?
No, I gotta have the comic book.
Yeah,
yeah, and they've a lot of people try to get me to convert to the digital, but I can't do it. When I travel, my bag's full of comic books.
Yeah. That's from working in a comic book store.
It's the most amazing thing to me, walking onto an airplane and having the guy in the business suit, excuse me, that's the window seat's mine in first class,
yeah,
and then sitting down, and I'm wearing fatigue shorts and like a comic book nerd shirt, and I just bust my bag out and I start pulling out comic books, and he's reading like the Wall Street Journal, and he's looking at me like, how the hell is this guy in first class?
How does this comic book read? I think those prejudices are over now. People understand.
No, they don't.
He must be in a band.
Exactly. Or a drug dealer. That's what his
mind is. A drug dealing comic lover.
Yeah. 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 He probably can't even read. He's looking at the pictures.
Oh, do you want to be a superhero?
Oh. Talking to me like I'm a little puppy.
Dude, the Man of Steel trailer looked pretty badass.
I hate Superman.
Do you do?
I hate him.
Too much of a.
It's good... why I love Mark Waid's Irredeemable. Uh-huh. Because I think if anybody, everybody has bad days, and even Goody Two Shoes Clark Kent / Superman would have a bad day, and somebody at some point would piss him off or catch him at the wrong moment, and he would just heat vision them. They would disintegrate. And
sure.
You'd probably feel really guilty about it afterwards, but you know how you lash out at your loved ones, and you're cranky or whatever, you know, your girlfriend's nagging you about something. You're like, all right, I'll do it. Like, I see him doing that, except punching through somebody's skull and just being like, oh crap.
So you think he has too much power to be a good
absolute
superhero?
Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely.
Oh, and you think Superman would be corrupted?
And I think Superman would be a motherfucker.
I guess that's interesting. I mean,
but that probably tells you more about my personality than his.
No,
because if I was Superman, I
so much of like superhero lore always boils down to like one moment in their lives,
right?
But of course, they, you know, like he would have to have struggles at some point, and just, you know, just the fact that he was an orphan who, you know, saw his Earth father die, and oh, you have to bear great responsibility. Like,
I'm gonna go see it.
Yeah,
you know, I'm more on the fence about the new Star Wars stuff that I'm hearing about.
I think Star Wars is gonna be okay. I really do.
I'm really nervous.
No, I think it's gonna be great
because I don't want to feel like I got tricked again because that Phantom Menace stuff.
Yeah, but what I think is gonna happen is I really think Disney has allowed people to take franchises into good directions, like, you know, with Avengers,
right,
or the Muppet franchise. I think Disney is a company that's large enough to support a property the size of Star Wars and to get people in there to make a Star Wars movie that they really wanted to see. Like, it'll essentially be a really high budget fan film.
And that's another thing 15-year-old me predicted in the comic shop was someday we're going to get other writers and directors doing Star Wars stuff. We got to. And
of
now
course.
It looks like we're getting. And there's I want to see something like some weird stuff, like a Tarantino bounty hunter film. You know what I mean?
Oh,
where,
yeah,
like Bossk and IG-88 like hate Boba Fett and like, you know what I mean? Like
that would be amazing. Of course, if Tarantino did it, like Boba Fett would be dropping the N-word.
Oh yeah.
That. Like, oh,
it'd be fantastic. It'd be fucking great.
Tarantino's. Just like early Knights of the Old Republic or Knights of the Republic or whatever.
It could be anything. It could just be a standalone Chewbacca film. You know what I mean? Chewbacca's banging chicks and,
oh,
you know,
God,
what I mean? I'm like an all-night bender. He steals the Millennium Falcon.
Chewbacca, basically what would happen is there would be a series of like Wookiee exploitation movies.
Yeah.
Where it's just like all the Wookiees.
Like Dolomite.
Yeah, exactly. Like Wookiee Dolomite. He'd be doing all these crazy like... That would be the trailer for Pac Rim looks fucking awesome too.
For what?
Pacific Rim.
Oh, okay.
You should watch that.
I will. I haven't watched any trailers. I still got to watch the trailer for the Evil Dead remake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always slacking on stuff like that.
It's hard to keep up with everything, especially when you're on the road most of the time.
Yes.
Do you travel alone? And then we'll wrap it up because this is I don't want to take too much of your time. But are you? Is it the same thing for what you do as? Because a lot of times with comedy, you'll do your shows, and they're super fun, and then you go back to the hotel room, and then it's just you, alone, and then you just, you know, like, you just feel weirdly sad, and you go, I shouldn't feel bad, I just had great shows, I did what I came to do, But just here I am, left with all this energy that
high you get from, you know, making people laugh.
Sure.
And you know, you're entertaining people, and it's a high.
You're scooping out your emotional core,
right? And then the solitude just suffocates you. Yeah, it's the exact same thing.
I understand why people drink and do drugs. Like, I understand why they're like, I just need to not feel this way.
I do too. No, I just because I don't do it doesn't mean I don't get it. Like, I understand, you know. Another parallel, you know. When you're done with a wrestling show, you'd either jump into a car. I mean, when you're broke, you're starving. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You jump into a car with as many people as you can. And we used to have a minivan that we'd just stick like eight people in. Stick eight people in a hotel. So we never had that solitude, but there was a point in my career where, like, you know, once I'm, you know, quote unquote, made it to the top, it's very lonely, you know. It's very, because it's a competitive, it's the most phony competitive sport in the world.
Right.
You know, where it's predetermined, obviously, and, you know, people are going to tell you what you do isn't real, but then, you know, you're swimming with sharks half the time and everybody wants your spot, they want your job. You know, so it's kind of hard to find buddies sometimes.
Well, I guess that's true, that there is the public competitiveness, but there is actually really a substrate of actual, like, fuck that guy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What do you define as, well, first of all, what do you do in those moments where you feel like the solitude is a little overwhelming? Like, how do you cope with it?
Well, I have a sleeping problem as well. Like, I barely ever sleep. So I wander around a lot.
Like, just walk around at night?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, read comic books, pass the time. My problem, though, is if I'm going, like, a two-week European tour, I will read every single comic book that I brought with me to read while I'm waiting in the airport to fly out.
And then it's done.
It's fucking horrible.
Yeah.
And I'm carrying around 20 pounds of comic books. Now, I mean, how I used to travel and how I travel now are two completely different things. About a little over a year ago, I got a bus. I lease a bus, a Star Coach thing. And, you know, there's a bed on there. I got a refrigerator. So, I mean, it's the difference is night and day. But, you know, when you're driving through, you know, Wyoming by yourself, you know, just going to, like, the next town and checking into a hotel. And, you know, I mean, smartphones are, like, lifesavers. I can't imagine, you know, we used to travel with a map. You know what I mean? We used to have a map in the car. And then when MapQuest came out, holy shit. It opened up like a new world for all of us.
Chloe and I drove across country over the summer, and I don't know what we would have done without Yelp to tell us, like, don't stay at this place, eat at this restaurant.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, we're such spoiled pussies now.
And that's one thing I want to do, though. That's one of the things I need to do is drive across country. Because I've been everywhere twice, and I've seen a lot of cool things, but I'm never in one place for too long.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm in Australia, and it's like, oh, cool, there's Australia. You have nice buses and hotels. You know?
Need a month. You really need a month. We did it in, like, we drove from LA to Memphis in, like, two, and back in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And it's great, but you do, like, you know, on day five, where you go, all right, we got to get back on the road and drive another 500 miles today,
right.
400 miles today. You know, like, that, it's sort of similar. You really need a month where you can stop and go, hey, I'm going to stay in, you know, New Mexico for 3 days.
Map it out and check stuff
really,
out.
Really, really check it out.
Yeah.
It's nice. We're fortunate that America doesn't have the history that other countries have, like, particularly, you know, like, if you go to Europe or Asia, but what we do have is, you know, just an amazing landmass with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And you stumble across these towns that are virtually untouched by time, and you can see, oh yeah, this town, you can see that it looks like Deadwood, you know?
There's
like
the hanging tree over there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, here's two stories of these wooden buildings and, you know, they pave the streets and put electricity in, but it's ultimately, like, pretty much the same town.
Yeah, I gotta check that out.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good town. And it's a good thing to do if you ever have time.
Someday.
Do you ever feel like you can take time off?
I'm gotta make the hay while the sun shines kind of guy.
Yeah.
So, I've never had a break, you know, in 10 years, you know. The last time I didn't wrestle for an extended period of time, I fractured my skull. And I wasn't supposed to wrestle for, like, 14 months, and I took 2 months off.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
What part of your skull? Where did you?
It was, like, the side. Like, I got an x-ray here somewhere. It was pretty badass. Like, you see, like, this weird hairline fracture of my skull. It's pretty weird.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
There's really nothing they can even do for that.
No, that's what I said. I go, well, what are you going to do to me? And the guy was just, the doctor in Jersey was just like, you can't put a cast on your head, so you just can't do anything strenuous.
Can you caulk this? Can you just like squirt some caulk in there? And...
Yeah, yeah.
You need an adamantium skeleton.
I wish. Trust me, I wish. Because since I've been with the WWE, every time I've gotten hurt, there's actually been moments in my career where like, I was like, all right, sweet. I just tore my gluteus medius tendon in my hip, and I have to go get surgery. At least I'm getting a break.
Yeah.
And, like, I go to get surgery, and the doctor gives me my pre-op MRI and says that it's not torn off the bone, and he's not going to cut me. Just go home and rehab. And I'm like, what's rehab on that? He's like, 2-3 months. So in my mind, I'm like, cha-ching, just scored 3 months of, you know, not being around all these people that I hate right now. Yeah. Awesome. And then Vince McMahon calls you and goes, heard you're not getting surgery. That's good news. I'm going to need you at TV on Monday to do commentary. And you're on the phone. And you're just like, all right. And you're, you know what I mean? And you're on your iPad and you're like X-ing out the Hawaii Marriott website. You're like, fuck yeah, all right, I'll see you Monday. Thanks, man.
Can I Skype in for that? Do you actually need me there?
Exactly.
What's the craziest thing that you've ever, like, what's the worst you've ever actually been hurt, and but then you still had to go, like, you still had to...
The skull fracture thing was the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And I did it in a match, and I thought I'd broke my neck.
Oh, shit.
Like, I hit, and, like, it was this weird, like, neckbreaker thing where the guy's head kind of was on top of mine, and we hit the mat at the same time. And I felt, like, this side of my body get really warm.
Oh, shit.
So I was like, all right, something horrible just happened to me. But, like, you know, I'm wiggling my toes and my fingers, and I'm like, okay. And I kind of just shake it off, and I wrestled for, like, another, I don't know, 10 minutes or something like that. And by the end of the match, I was fucked. Like, I crazy, crazy vertigo, and I needed like a chair to use as a walker to get to the back. And everyone's clapping, like, "Oh, this guy's, wow, he's good. He's just selling, you know. Wow, he's really good at his job." And then I got to the back, and I just collapsed and just vomited everywhere. And...
Are you pretty good with that stuff, or do you like? I personally would be like, "I'm fucking dying." I would.
Well, I didn't know, and I don't know if it's just a personality trait of mine, or if it's just a wrestler thing where you just don't think. You're like, "Well, I'm out here, and I gotta finish this match." You know what I mean? I got to do it. You know, I mean, hindsight being what it is, probably should have just stopped. Probably should just went, time out, everybody. I really just got hurt.
I'm not okay. Yay. Yeah. No.
Yeah, that doesn't exist in my world, unfortunately.
How do you know when you've made it? Like, what do you have a thing in your head where you go, there's a finish line that I cross, or is it a constant... Oh, I'm not quite there yet. Oh, I'm still not quite there. Well, I didn't do this. Well, this guy did this. Like, do you...
I think it constantly changes, and it's always little things that you'd have to explain to the general population. I remember one of the first times I was like, oh, wow, I made it. When I first signed in 2005, I was just backstage, and we have a makeup lady, and her name's Jan, and she's been there 25 years, something ridiculous, right? Like, Jan could write a book, probably, that they would not want her to write. But, you know, she has this case, and there's water and hair gel, and, like, you know, it's for everybody. And, like, I walked over to the water bottle to, like, spray my hair before I went to the ring or whatever, and she starts swearing at me. She's like, hey, what are you doing? Stop it. You know, she's barking at me, and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. And I, like, put the water back and, like, ran away, you know what I mean? And then, like, you know, I'd been there a couple of years, and, like, one day Jen was like, hey, Punk, you need a haircut or anything today? And I was just like, oh, I've made it.
You,
like,
made it because she accepted you.
Jan not only acknowledged me, but she wants to do me the service of cutting my hair.
She was the gatekeeper.
I'm a top guy now. This is awesome. You know, like, other times, you're always on shows when, like, somebody big gets hurt, you know, we offer refunds, you know? There'll be the announcement, you know, like, so-and-so is hurt, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I remember smartphones again, somebody recorded it, like, I did my elbow in, I got my elbow scoped 2 years ago, and they, like, made an announcement, like, oh, you know, CM Punk's not here tonight, if you want a refund, you gotta get it before the second match or whatever like that. And I was like, wow, I fucking made it, you know what I mean? Like, they're offering refunds, like,
so for you,
yeah, that's pretty badass, you know. There's moments like that. You know, it really has nothing with being a champion or you know, having a title. Or, you know, I just I pride myself on being like the go-to guy.
Yeah.
And when everyone else goes down, or when somebody else can't do something, or if it's a hard job, it's something nobody else wants to do. Like, I'm the guy. Like, I'll grind it out. I'll do it.
I think there's on one side you go, well, okay, so you're the champion, so you have this title, but it's predetermined.
Right.
So part of you, like, some of them might go, well, but you didn't earn that because they just gave it to you. But the other part is like, yeah, but you didn't see all the shit that I had to go through.
Absolutely.
Behind the scenes to make that happen. There was a journey. You just didn't see all of it.
Right. I mean, there's a ton of people out there and on Twitter that think that we just do, Mondays. Yeah. But there's Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays, Mondays and Tuesdays, and we do one international tour a month. I mean, and on top of that, I'm doing media, all the stuff that you did this morning, I'm doing that.
Radio, yeah.
Yeah, all that. And then you're talking to kids at schools, you're doing Be a Star rallies, you're doing Make a Wishes. Yeah, I mean, it's a grind. It's constant. But like, that's the cool, rewarding stuff too. You know what I mean? When a mom comes to an autograph signing and she's like, hey, I just want you to know, I'd never let my kid watch wrestling. And then he explained to me, there's this guy and he's got drug-free in his knuckles. And like, I look over and the little kid's got his hands taped and they're X'd up. And he wrote drug-free on his knuckle.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Adorable.
Like, that stuff's pretty wild. That almost goes back to you asking me if like, I feel I have a responsibility. And like, I think the people that get it. And the only thing I ever tell kids is, I don't even preach, hey, don't do drugs, don't smoke, I'll tell them not to, but I'll also tell them, like, I think a lot of times you tell a kid not to do something, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Be yourself and find something that you love and do it for a living. Like, that's my advice to kids.
It really is that I've been trying to give the same advice to people is like, find the thing that you love and then just do that for as long as you're passionate about it.
Yeah.
And I have to totally apologize to you because when they said CM Punk's coming on, I mean, I knew who you were, but I was like, really, I was weirdly sort of prejudiced, and I apologized for that because it wasn't fair. You came on, you and Yvette Nicole Brown were fucking, that was such a great show for us because you guys came in, you clearly loved the show, you had information. Yvette brought fucking notes, like a stack
of notes.
That was
amazing. I love that about her.
And the show worked, the Talking Dead worked the best because there were points that you guys didn't agree on, and you both had, there was like an intelligent discourse about it, and you were both passionate about it, and you could tell that you loved the show, and it really was, that makes for the best episodes of that show when people come on and they can do that and engage in that way.
Yeah, it's a conversation,
It is.
I don't just want to see two ham bones sit on the couch,
Not everyone can do it, though. I mean, you're saying it's a conversation. Not everyone can sit and just have a conversation.
Right.
They don't know how to be themselves. They don't know. Like, some people are so used to being characters.
I thought it was a cool dichotomy, too, because she's never read the comic books. She's a fan of the show.
Loves the show.
She started watching the show and loves it. Me, I was one of those that was counting the days. Oh my God, there's a pilot. Oh my God, I'm reading stuff on the internet about, Walking Dead show. Oh, this is going to be amazing. So it's cool to see that. That's why I love that show.
Have you gotten to Negan in the comic books yet?
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. And there's that part of me that reads, oh, Negan, a new character. Oh, he's a bad guy. He's a ruthless motherfucker. I could totally be Negan on season 5 of Walking Dead.
Oh my God.
That's all I do.
Dude, you totally could be. I mean, because it's so funny that the way that they're drawing him, I mean, this isn't too much, this isn't really a spoiler, but just they're drawing him almost like a sunny, like 1950s comic. And he's the worst character. Like, he's the most evil character that you've seen yet. Like, just...
Yeah, I think he's trying to top the governor on this one.
Tops the governor. Yeah. Way tops the governor. But even in the show, the choice to make the governor David Morrissey as opposed to what the governor was in the comics, which was, clearly the governor was a piece of shit right off the bat.
Right.
But there still is a... the show keeps doing this thing where you're like... Okay, I sort of see where he's coming. Oh, no, he's fucking crazy. Okay,
he seems like a normal guy, he's got an aquarium full of heads.
Yeah. Shit. Okay, not that. But anyway, thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on Talking Dead. You're certainly welcome back to come on if you want.
I'm sure we'll work it out.
And thank you for letting me come do the podcast with you. I appreciate this. And I'm sorry that I didn't know that much about wrestling coming into this.
I got to apologize, dude. It's, we're all into what we're into.
Yeah, I know, but I do... But for me, I like connecting with people on the sort of basic fundamental parallels of of looking at different professions, whether it be writing, directing, you know, music, comedy, wrestling, or whatever, and then going, oh, at the core of it, we all do the same thing that's expressed in slightly different ways, but our mechanisms are basically the same.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all the same kid. I mean, I think a lot of my friends, I say that all the time, like, we're the same kid. We were just put in different situations in different parts of the world, and we all like the same stuff. And
I didn't have the physicality to back it up, so my wrestling was words, you know?
If anybody out there ever messes with you, Chris, you know.
Thank you.
We'll go get them.
Because I'm going to get torched, I'm sure, because I didn't ask certain questions that
I think there's you're going to get torched for having me on your show.
That's true, too.
I think there's going to be your Nerdist loyalists, who are like, this is a fucking wrestler guy.
Yeah.
You know?
But then
I got a flux capacitor, dude.
Yeah, I'm looking at I can see your refrigerator from here, and it says Not Penny's Boat on the side there.
Yeah. That's been up there for years.
So that's I hope people, sometimes what happens is with the podcast is they'll go, and I don't know why they comment about this, but they'll go, oh yeah, I saw you had this person on, I think I'll pass on this one. And I always want to go, listen, be an intelligent individual, consume something and then judge it, because I don't think anyone could listen to you and be like, what a jarhead piece of crap. Like, you go, oh wow, he's an intelligent guy that has thoughts and feelings and a plan, and you know,
I do that. I actually like to listen to the podcast about people I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, people I've never heard. Like, well shit, okay, if this person is on Chris Hardwick's podcast, like, I'm gonna listen to it, because apparently I'm missing something.
That is a unique point of view. Most people do not want to be challenged. They kind of paint their picture of what they like and don't like, and I suffer from it too sometimes. Like, I've never listened to a One Direction song. What if it's great? I don't know. It's probably not, but what if it is? And so we get into our little cultural comfort zones, and it's easy to judge and go and create an us and them kind of a situation. But I feel like the stronger people are the people who go, I don't know what this is. This might be dumb, but I'm going to do it anyway because maybe I'll like it.
Well,
and then I'll judge.
How many times did you do that with comic books? You know what I mean? Like, no, that's weird. I don't like who does the covers. You know?
Yeah.
All right, no, I'm going to try it.
I don't entirely blame people. I do think we make a lot of lazy cultural choices, but I do think that it's just people are inundated with so much of everything that it's hard for our brains to process. I don't think our brains are evolved to process the amount of information that we currently process. And so I think that's why people just paint things into boxes and things are very black and white. And, well, I'm not going to listen to that. Fuck that guy, because I'm sure it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
Because they just don't have the energy to explore everything and make an informed decision. But I wish people would strive to do that more often.
Maybe they will after listening to this podcast.
I hope so. Okay. And if any other wrestlers give you a bad time, I'll snark at him for you.
I appreciate it.
I'll give you some good roasty quips.
You can tweet him something.
Yeah, 140 characters. You're going to hear it from me.
You're going to get it.
Other wrestlers. Who's your biggest nemesis right now?
Jeez, I don't know. I think me and John Cena have always been, like, I'm the Randy Savage to his Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest rivalry. It's been going on for a while.
All right, I'll come up with a good John Cena tweet.
Yeah, do it.
You look like someone put Matt Damon in a Giganta array.
That probably sounds like something he would say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's not really
good. Let me handle it.
Okay, I'll let you deal with that. How dare you help all those kids? Oh, no, that's... I don't have anything. All right, well, enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.